FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's January 22nd, 2018. The months, the years, the days, the seconds, the minutes, they just go by so quickly. Well, men may live and men may die, but the blockchain is forever. And I say that because I am drinking the Kool-Aid. Just got back from the North American Bitcoin conference in Chile, Miami, Florida. So, hey, as always, participate in the show. Email us. I'm only about 35 behind right now. KL@KerryLutz.com. Well, is the blockchain forever? Is man forever? Is the U.S. government forever? John Rubino, happy Monday. Welcome back as always.
Hey, Kerry. Good to be back. And stocks are up again today. Surprise, surprise.
What's a stock? I'm into tokens. Yeah. I'm into Bitcoin. Yeah. I'm into altcoins. I'm into everything that that I can just put in a digital wallet and hide it from the rest of the world, John.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the meantime, the old tokens, stocks and bonds, are doing pretty well. So it's interesting to watch basically everything go up now. You know, we're in the everything bubble. And so wherever you look, you're seeing capital flow into stuff, which is, well, the everything bubble is a new concept, but the behavior of financial assets right now feel very familiar. This is 1999 again, or 2006 again. And so the question is, do we have a 2000 or 2008 coming, or is something different about the amount of capital that's flowing into, you know, the world's asset classes? And you can say the same thing about cryptocurrencies, even though they're in a nasty correction right now. There's still a ton of capital flowing into that sector, as is illustrated by all the ICOs that are still happening. You know, people are still bringing out new coins, which are pretty well received by hackers as well. It turns out that like 10 to 15% of the cash flowing into ICOs is stolen by hackers so far. So it's a, you know, it's a lot of stuff going on that feels new to the people who are new to it and feels very familiar to the old guys who have been through a few bubbles, you know. Fascinating times and frustrating times, because this shouldn't be repeating. You know, stuff like this shouldn't be happening after the tech stock bubble and the housing bubble. You know, we should have learned our lesson. We should understand the dynamics of financial bubbles by now, but we don't. You know, easy money is too hard to pass up. And young generations come along without the institutionalized pain that the older generations carry around with them. So it's really easy for the young guys you hung out with at the Bitcoin conference, where you were this last weekend, to just be blissfully unaware of how a bubble works. So it's both interesting and fun and frustrating talking to guys like that, because you feel like you know way more than them, but they feel like they know way more than you. So you kind of talk past each other.
Well, let me tell you, like, there were so many 20-something billionaires walking around with a swagger in their walk. And people were talking about, like, yeah, I used to trade 50,000 bitcoins for $500. And now that 50,000 bitcoins would be worth $500 million. And they managed to hold on, a lot of them, once they started seeing it go up. Maybe there's 1,000 Bitcoin billionaires. There's thousands of millionaires, at least on paper. Or, well, it's not on paper, though. At least on the ledger, they're multi-millionaires and billionaires. But the ledger can change very quickly as the value of the coins. One thing that was really interesting, John, and I know you'll appreciate this because your acute understanding of financial markets, to me, and understand, I am a recovering attorney. I thought I was fully recovered, but there was a talk among all these altcoin maven attorneys, experts, and one of them brought up a subject that I've known has been there from the get-go, but I could never quite articulate it as well as she did, and that is the practice of painting the tape. And evidently, there's no securities laws. The CFTC, that's the Commodities Future Trading Commission, they're kind of involved in it because a lot of these alts are effectively derivatives, but there's no law against manipulating the price of these tokens because they're not a security, or maybe they are, or I don't know. I don't even know. There are new security tokens that actually are registered as securities, but a lot of them aren't registered as anything. They just did ICOs and they followed it by the law, and or they didn't even bother issuing the initial ones in the US. So they're exempt from the initial securities offerings statutes. But then once a coin is out there, John, all you need is a wallet and you could be in Timbuktu or you could be at the SEC's headquarters in Washington, D.C. and you could have that coin. It doesn't matter your location. So the laws are really becoming irrelevant. It's a little bit scary.
Well, that's going to be the story, at least in part, of 2018, is how do governments deal with cryptocurrencies, which as an asset class have become both something that's relevant to investors, which means governments want to regulate them to protect their constituents, and something that's a threat to the world's fiat currencies, which is where governments derive most of their power, really, because that's how they pay for their military. So if you say, the dollar is based on its military, the military is based on the dollar, at the same time, because we couldn't finance our military without having the world's reserve currency. So you threaten that and, you're stabbing a knife into the heart of the guys who run things in the world right now. And so they're reacting to it, which means that during 2018, we'll see more of what happened in, for instance, Korea, where they're making noises about completely banning the trading of cryptocurrencies. And in Russia, where they tried something similar, and in China, where they tried something similar, and it's going to happen everywhere in one way or another as governments come to grip with this. So the question becomes, as you were saying, whether the law applies to stuff like this or whether it can be applied. In other words, can you create a criminal class by defining Bitcoin as something that's illegal? And then can you do anything to that criminal class? Like, can you selectively enforce that law as a way of controlling political discussion in your country? If you can track who's doing what on the blockchain and then go after the guys who speak out against some other aspect of your government policies, that sounds an awful lot like the drug war to me. Hey. Where we selectively enforce drug laws basically as a way of keeping African Americans from being able to vote, will something like that happen? But against libertarians in the cryptocurrency market? And that's really an interesting question. And I don't think the answer is clear yet, because as you said, all you need is a functioning internet account and you can trade and buy and sell with Bitcoins anywhere in the world, right? So your government border doesn't really matter much. And if you're committing a crime in Switzerland, but you're an American citizen, what does that mean for your status as a free person or a criminal or whatever? This is stuff that we have to sort out. It's going to be fun to watch the markets and the governments of the world do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a citizen of the world.
I don't think there's a fixed answer.
Yeah. I'm a citizen of the world. That's my defense. there's no uniformity in the laws. The U.S. definitely has the most advanced securities laws, from what I understand, and perhaps I'm off here, but I think that the U.S. has been regulating them longer than just about any place else. So the U.S., it's regulatory, and that's another thing I'm writing an article about, is that the U.S.'s longtime regulatory schema here, going back to the Securities Act of, I think it was 34, has been a dismal failure, John. It hasn't stopped people, hasn't stopped you from getting ripped off by kleptos, whether they be klepto stock issuers or kleptocurrency issuers, right? It's really been a failure when you look at it.
Well, I think that, for instance, Glass-Steagall effectively kept banks from becoming the criminal organizations that they are today for a few decades, So it's possible that regulations can protect people. Mm-hmm. And the government, of course, would say that it's obviously possible that regulations can protect people and their impulse, because they look at the good that's being done by the regulatory apparatus without looking at the bad that's done by it, and they conclude that most regulations are good things, and that's arguable, but it's not arguable that they intend to regulate whatever happens within their borders, because that's, you know, first of all, it's how you accumulate power if you're a regulatory state, right? The more regulations you create, the more power you have over people. So government always has that impulse. So cryptocurrencies won't be any different in that sense. And we'll see over the next few years. Well, for instance, this weekend, the IMF called for global coordination of Bitcoin regulation. In other words, they don't want it to be country by country. Yeah, they want it to be supranational.
Hey, how cool is that?
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's hard to say, really. Hey,
well, whether it'll happen or not, it's another issue too. But it's exactly my point there, John, is that there is no way on a country by country basis to regulate this. And should it be, look, I mean, what gives government its biggest power is issuing currency. That's become the bailiwick of the sovereign state. And once they get it, and I think they're starting to wake up to it now, once they get it that this is a real threat to the sovereign's power, because if you can't issue money, if nobody's going to take your money, or they're going to take other money in lieu of yours because they don't trust your money, what does that do to government power? And that, I think, is the biggest thing hanging over. So maybe the IMF will actually regulate it all, John. Maybe they're actually going to do it. I don't know the answer to it. I just know the questions. And of course, it'll be on the grounds that they're just keeping it safe for you, right? I mean,
Jim Rickards says that the coming currency reset is going to be a global move away from national fiat currencies and towards the IMF special drawing rights, which kind of dovetails with global regulation of cryptocurrencies. You know, you might end up with the most important cryptocurrencies being included in the SDR basket.
Yeah.
And therefore regulated by the entity that manages the SDR basket, you know, and if it's a global regulation, who knows what it's going to be? But I think that to the extent that cryptocurrencies spreading and becoming more popular become a threat to the SDR, then you'll see global crackdowns on cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, well.
And again, who knows? You know, who knows whether that's possible? We're going to find out. You know, who exactly is the most powerful in the currency market? The internet and the private sector money that's being created, or governments that control national and supranational currencies? We'll find out. Fascinating time to be alive from an economic theory standpoint.
It's such a great question, and one of which, due to our knowledge, our limited knowledge, I mean, we just don't know the answer to. But the one thing you know is that the powerful don't just willingly give up power. There's always a fight, right? There's always a fight. And basically, it's a fight to the death here, I think. I think it's going to be an amazing power struggle.
Yeah.
And a lot, you know, because China can't regulate it on their own. And I'm about to write another article, and I'm starting a group, special group. Cryptocurrencies are the best asset protection device ever created. I'm going back to the time I was a lawyer. When you've got these, when you're a target for litigation everywhere you go, where you're always a target, John, you know that. Then all of a sudden, right, what happens? If you can put all your money, you don't have to like put it into cash. You don't have to go to a foreign country. All you got to do is just turn it into, you have to take steps, you have to take measures. But once it's in cryptocurrency, I don't think any plaintiff's attorney is ever going to be able to basically nail you to get their judgment paid unless you make a mistake.
So, Carrie, okay, here's a non-lawyer's question for you. If it's possible to view the transactions taking place within the within the blockchain, and therefore know who has what, why can't a government just say, okay, well, here's a judgment against you, and if you don't give us X number of Bitcoin from your stash, which we know you have, we'll take your other property. So one way or another, we're going to see this judgment satisfied with your assets. And, you know, that's something that happens now with foreign assets. You know, if you've got real estate in Costa Rica and you lose a lawsuit in the U.S., they can give you that choice, right? We'll take your domestic assets or your foreign assets. Right. So why don't you give us that Costa Rican condo? Why wouldn't it work that way with cryptocurrencies?
It's impossible for it to work that way if you do it right. Because if you do it right, they won't even know you own it. And presumably, you sell off all your assets, and the assets you can't. If you pre-plan the judgment, then it goes into a limited liability company or a limited partnership. All those assets you can't protect, but all your liquid assets go into cryptocurrencies. All they can do is hold you in for a deposition. And then if you don't purge yourself, if you don't answer the questions or lie, you can be held in contempt and they can jail you for that. So that is the only way. But if you are not holding the cryptocurrency, or they don't know about it, what they don't know, they can't collect. That's the rule of collections.
Okay, so Kerry, you're saying cryptocurrencies are anonymous then?
I'm saying they can be anonymous.
But if they can be anonymous,
yeah,
don't governments say, well, that's money laundering? You know, if you're doing something that we can't see, that's illegal. That's like a Swiss bank account, and we want to see it, and you have to show it to us, you're a criminal.
Yeah, well, when you have a wallet and you move around the coins enough, like 8 times, they can't be traced, all right? You move it from wallet to wallet to wallet. And they're overseas wallets. I mean, you have to be careful, obviously, being hacked. There's all these problems that you can have. And if your money is distributed in 5 different wallets and 5 different alt currencies, good luck. I mean, this is what I did for a living, tracking this stuff down. No one's going to be able to find it. You know, private creditors, forget it. Government creditors, going to be all but impossible. You know, you're getting divorced. You had that $1 million in the account and it goes into a cryptocurrency. And hey, where'd it go? I don't know. It's not an exchange. It just opens up wonderful opportunities for asset protection. Whatever your thing is, like you get into a car, or somebody comes in your house, trips, bangs their head on the floor, has a subdural hematoma, and you're on the hook and you don't have enough homeowners insurance to cover it. They can go after your private assets to get it. So in that situation, it's really, it's like no other asset protection device.
A government regulator hearing what you're saying is going to respond, well, yeah, okay, you law-abiding guy with marital problems can do this, but then so can ISIS.
Oh yeah.
And we can't have ISIS doing that, so we need to regulate to the extent that anonymity disappears, the whole sphere of cryptocurrencies.
I couldn't agree with you more. That will be their justification for doing it, no doubt. But hey, it's going to be very, very difficult you can't get rid of them unless the whole world gets together. If there's one country, if you can have all of your stuff in Cuba, then how does the government stop it? Right.
Well, they would stop it by either invading Cuba, which we would love to do. You know, half the U.S. government would love to do that today, or imposing some kind of sanctions on a little country. You know, that's what we've been doing with the island tax havens, right?
Right.
We've been abusing them financially until they get into line and show us what's in their bank accounts there. Mm-hmm. If the IMF now controls the world's reserve currency, then the members of the IMF, which basically are the guys who run the world, could do that to anybody. You know, we've done it to Switzerland. If we could do it to Switzerland, what tax haven, you know, financial banking center is immune from that? You know, I don't have the answer to any of this, obviously, but it just seems like that's the dynamic that plays out. You know, we're going to test the power of some really interesting, really unique entities going forward, where we find out what governments can actually do, and we find out what cryptocurrencies can do to resist what governments want to do.
Yeah, sure.
And 2018 is when a lot of it comes to a head. So it's you know, something that's fascinating to look forward to and is going to provide headline news for, you know, at least another year, and maybe a lot longer.
I love the whole concept of it, all competing currencies, but we do have to be realistic here. You know, there's a real built-in bias against it. And hey, we're just going to have to see what happens, but it's really exciting. It's something you need to keep track of, need to watch. As always, find John's work over at dollarcollapse.com and subscribe to his newsletter, as well as ours, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Check out the Twitter feed at Kerry Lutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network, and hey, send us an email, be part of the show, kl@carrylutz.com. John, we will resume this conversation next week when I'll have written a couple of articles about it, and we'll be able to go into it much more in depth. Take care till then.
Okay. See you, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.